Well, there's a lot of in that within regards to the Torah, in regard to Zara'at and houses and all that sort of thing. And I'm going to take my message today from the Haftarah from Menachem Beit. And it's amazing because I started this message, writing this message, as I always do on Monday morning. And on Mondays, I spend the whole day on it, and I usually just do the first draft and let Yah speak to me, and then I go back to it again on Wednesday and Thursday, and often do a last run through again on Saturday morning. And I'm still upgrading it. Every time I look at it, there's something that gets me to change. But you'll find the reason why I'm explaining all that when I get into it. Because I've titled the message "Be the Change." Okay, because when we read from Malachim Bet or 2 Kings chapter 7 verses 1 to 6, Elisha the prophet answered and said, "Listen to the word of Yehovah. Here is what Yehovah says. Tomorrow by this time 6 quarts of fine flour will sell for only a shekel, and half a bushel of barley for a shekel in the market at the gate to Shomron." The servant on whose arm the king was leaning answered the man of Elohim, "Why, this couldn't happen even if Yehovah made windows in heaven." Elisha answered, "All right, you yourself will see it with your own eyes, but you won't eat any of it." Now there were four men with Zara'at at the entrance to the city gate. They couldn't go in, they weren't allowed in the city gate, into the city. And they said to each other, "Why should we sit here till we die? If we say we'll enter the city, then the city has been struck by the famine, so we'll die there. And if we sit still here, we'll also die. Let's go and surrender to the army of Aram. If they spare our lives, we will live. And if they kill us, we'll only die." So they got up during the twilight to go to the camp of Aram. But when they reached the outskirts of the camp of Aram, they saw no one. And Yehovah had caused the army of Aram to hear the sound of chariots and horses. It sounded like a huge army, and they said to each other, "The king of Israel must have hired the kings of the Hittite and the kings of the Egyptians to attack us." It didn't matter what they did, they were going to die. They've got Zara'at. And they're four famished, stricken men with Zara'at. They had no food. They couldn't get into the city to get food. So there was only death looking at them in the face anyway. So they felt, I suppose, that they had nothing to lose. So these four men led one of the greatest deliverances and revivals the nation of Israel had ever witnessed. Yehovah transformed this twilight trip into the most hilarious invasions in all history. The timid, soft steps of the four men with Zara'at, cautiously walking on the path to the Syrian camp, was amplified by Yah into a roar of chariot wheels, rumbling, chariot wheels rumbling, swords clanging, horses galloping or panting, soldiers shouting and trumpets blasting. Now these four men with Zara'at, if you've seen people with Zara'at, they've got their feet bandaged and their hands bandaged. You know, they walk very slowly and very timidly. And this roar melted the Syrian soldiers' hearts with frightful fear of a devastating defeat was about to come upon them. So the noise of confusion went crackling through the air, through the whole camp, and they decided they were going to run. Elisha the prophet prophesied that this would happen. He was speaking to Yoram, the servant of the king of northern Israel, who was Ben-Hadad at the time. The king's kingdom of Yehuda ruled from Shomron at that time. That's the west bank of Jerusalem or Israel. That's Shomron. The west is known as now known as the West Bank. The army of Aram was sent by the king of Syria, whose capital city was in Damascus. Now, the Messianic community may seem to be a ragtag group of weekend soldiers where we work with. We work on a low or limited budget, especially in this place. Untrained soldiers in a lot of areas, definitely unpaid leaders with highly criticised efforts. We have a task which seems unattainable at times, unimaginable, and even unfathomable. But Yah can amplify our voice, and he does. He can magnify our work, and he can glorify our endeavours. We know we're not perfect, and therefore we also know that Yehovah can rectify our failures. He can mystify our enemies, of which we have many in this woke world today that we live in, especially, and he will also gratify our labours. Many people are waiting for Yehovah to move as things become more idealistic and less truthful every day. They are waiting and expecting Yeshua to return, and of course we all are. But Yah is saying, don't just sit there, do something. Don't wait for Yah, but be the change in the circumstances. These four men with Zaraat realised that even though they were outcasts in the city, they could do something. They stepped out in faith, but Yah did the rest. And we have to take a leaf out of their book. They weren't perfect, as in the first instance, they started thinking of themselves, and only after their consciences clicked in and they knew that they had to share the news of what they'd found, listen to what our reading says further on in Malachim 8, 7, 16 to 20. Then the people went out and ransacked the camp of Aram, with the result of 6 quarts of fine flour was sold for only a shekel, half a bushel of barley for a shekel, in keeping with what Yehovah had said. The king put the servant on whose arm he had learned in charge of the gate, and the people trampled him down in the gateway so that he died as the man of Yehovah said he would, who spoke when the king came to him. For the man of Yehovah had said to the king, tomorrow by this time 6 quarts of barley will sold for only a shekel and half a bushel of flour for a shekel in the market at the gate of Shomron. The servant had answered the man of Yehovah, why, this couldn't happen, even if Yehovah made windows in heaven. And Elisha said, all right, you see for yourself, and you will see it with your own eyes, but you won't eat any of it. And that's exactly what happened to him, because the people trampled him down in the gateway so that he died. The problems are always found at the gate or the Problems are always found at the gate or the doorway to our next level of growth. We have to have a problem for Yah to get us to get into the word so we can grow a little bit more. Okay, so this always happens. This is why Yah allows us to experience them. The four men with Zaraat were sitting outside the city walls of Shomron. The city had cast them out because they had Zaraat. They weren't allowed in there. They were an offence to look upon. No doubt with Zaraat sores, they were eyesores to behold. I know, I've seen people with Zaraat. I've prayed with people for Zaraat. I've ministered to them, especially in India. They literally cut off their own fingers and stub their own toes completely off because they can't feel them when they've got Zaraat. That's why you see their hands and feet bandaged, because they've lost their fingers and toes because they can't feel them, and they can be chopping something up and chop the finger off and it's gone and they don't realise it. That's what Zaraat does to you. And they had a potential of being highly contagious and infectious to anyone around them. We as believers are like this to the present world. Have you thought of that? Have you thought of that the world can see you as someone with Zara'at? You know, they see us as unclean and as grotesque people. And they, because they have come from a different mindset. The world has separated the Messianic community, separated churches and synagogues from society. And they're doing it more and more, as we saw this week on Monday night at the Syrian church in Sydney. We are an offence to their fleshly lusts. We are an eyesore to their humanism and materialism. We have the potential of being highly contagious and infectious as far as they are concerned. But, as Yeshua said, you are in the world, but you are not of the world. And that's the beauty. Can we go to Yochanan, John 15, 18 to 29? It says, if the world hates you, which it does, understand that it hated me first. If you belong to the world would have loved its own. But because you do not belong to the world, on the contrary, I have picked you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. We have to realise that we are going to suffer more and more as people come against us. We are now at the stage where we should be preparing ourselves for the final judgment. As Yeshua said in Matthew 25 and verse 32, all the nations will be assembled before him, and he will separate one from another as a shepherd separates sheep from goats. And even the Torah commands in Vayikra, Leviticus chapter 21 and verse 8, rather, you are to set him apart as holy, because he offers the bread of your Elohim. He is to be holy for you because I, Yehovah, make you holy as I am holy. We are to be set apart. The four men with Zara'at said, why should we sit here and die? Didn't matter where they go, they were going to die, so why sit there? The same applies to us in this present age. Just don't sit here and die. Let's get up and do something. As a Messianic community, we have nothing to lose. Hasatan will fight us. The world doesn't like us. Prayer has been removed from schools, parliamentary meetings. The people of the Messianic community, the Christian or the Jews, we and our principles are abhorred by the world today. Believing speakers are being attacked in their churches, as we saw on Monday night. The world does not like us. They are the devil and they will fight us. You know, I even received a message from a Gold Coast Christian organisation just yesterday, last night, telling me how to put our security guards in place, how to make sure each and every one of you are prepared. Anything you see that's strange, any stranger walking in, they told us, and they sent it to all the churches for the ministers to train their people up to guard them against people walking in to attack them. That came to me last night. We're blessed. We've got a security guard downstairs. We are very blessed. Yeah, I had that person in place long before any of this has ever happened. You know, he goes ahead of us. We are blessed. We don't have to worry about some stranger walking in our church and coming up and attacking us because he's blocked before he can get in. So let's look at I want to have a look now at an example of David and Goliath, or Goliath. The first words ever spoken by King David, or David as he was in the scriptures then, were in Shamuel Aleph, or 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 26. David said to the men standing with him, "What reward will be given to the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine anyway, that he challenges the armies of the living Elohim?" David shows up discussing Jehovah. We have yet to see any soldiers, brothers, king that had been in front of Goliath or Goliath discuss Jehovah. Can I tell you that before that you may be the only one in your sphere of influence that is talking about Yah? The rest of your family can be out of the kingdom. The people that you work with can be out of the kingdom. But King David was the only one discussing Yah, the living Elohim. Then the king, again, He goes to King Shaul in 1 Samuel 17:37. Then David says to Jehovah, "Who rescued me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will rescue me from the paw of this Philistine?" Shaul said to David, "Go, may Jehovah be with you." And he continues with the theme in 1 Samuel 17:45-47. David answered the Philistine, "You're coming at me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, and I'm coming at you in the name of Jehovah Zevaot, the Elohim of the armies of Israel, whom you have challenged. Today Jehovah will hand you over to me. I will attack you, lop off your head, and give the carcasses of the army of the Philistine to the birds in the air and the animals in the land. Then all the land will know that there is an Elohim in Israel." And if I look at that in Hebrew, if I go to the Hebrew text, because that doesn't make a lot of sense, it says in the Hebrew text, it says, "The land will know there exists Elohim in Israel." That's when I read it in the Hebrew. "And everyone assembled there will know that Jehovah does not save by sword or spear, for this is Jehovah's battle, and he will hand you over to us." So it doesn't matter what we're going through in life, we give it to Yah and he will fix it for us. Now, I was writing this long before I knew and had these scriptures, long before I knew what was going to happen later on in the week. No one else discusses Yah, but David discusses no one else but Jehovah. David sees what others don't and refuses to see what others do. Everyone else from the previous 40 days had majored on Goliath the giant or Goliath, and David majors on Jehovah. At this stage in his life, David is just a shepherd boy, and he saw more than anyone else that day. How do I know? Well, look at what he said to his giant. Let's go back to verse 45. David answered the Philistine, "You're coming at me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I'm coming at you in the name of Jehovah Zevaot, the Elohim of the armies of Israel, whom you have challenged." Armies, they can't even see one, let alone a multitude of armies. But David saw the host of armies standing by, and look what he does. In verse 48 of Shamuel Aleph, "When the Philistine got up, approached and came close to meet David, David hurried and ran towards the army to meet the Philistine." He didn't hold back, he ran towards it. I can see David's brothers shrinking in embarrassment, and Shaul just sighing and thinking, what does he think he's doing, running towards the enemy? But David spots the target and he seizes the moment. lets the sling go, and Goliath drops down to the ground. How long has it been since you ran towards your challenge? Just like the heroes, I believe, at Bondi Junction last Shabbat, they ran towards that guy. I believe many lives were saved because they ran towards the problem and not away from it. How long has it been since you became the solution and not the problem? It's time to stand up and be the change. We just can't sit here. We need to do something. We have to be prepared to march into the enemy's camp, and that's not easy. When you do that, you reclaim your joy. Take back your answer, and you reclaim your victory. Reclaim your miracle. This gives you power, as the anointing of Yah will fill you, and you will receive strength that has never empowered you before. And I've had to do that just this week. When my beautiful daughter-in-law was diagnosed with aggressive breast cancer that needs chemotherapy to shrink the tumour before they can even operate. I spent 2 days in tears and prayer, crying out to Yah, because this was just the third. I've got 2 sons, both affected now by cancer within their families. I only got 2 boys. One's got cancer himself, and now the other one's wife has an aggressive one. All I could do was pray. And the beauty of it is, I prayed it and prayed it and prayed it through for over 48 hours until I got to a stage where I knew that I could let go and let Yah take control. And He is in control. But has hardship and frustration robbed you of your ability to worship Yah? Has it reduced your level of faith? Has it stripped you of your desire to please Yah, or even be blinded your vision as to your next move in Him? It has increased mine, not reduced it. If I had not been in Yah's presence over this matter, I wouldn't have the peace that I have today. I just couldn't sit there and do nothing. But we have to do something. Does it seem like the devil's noose is securely wrapped around the necks of your family members, as it does mine? I now have 1 son with prostate cancer, a niece with long COVID, so debilitated she's wheelchair bound, and now my beautiful daughter-in-law. I can assure you, no mother is supposed to go through that, to see her children suffer the way they are. Yes, I have to admit they all took the jab, and now we are watching the repercussions take place. My family is just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many families suffering far more than mine, especially when young women in their early 50s, the age of all 3 of my family members, are dropping and dying just going for a walk with the dog, leaving children without a parent. Praise Yah, mine are still alive, and we can pray for their healing. Yah can do miracles, and Yah will do miracles, I believe it. Just don't sit there. We have to do something. Get down on your knees. Intercede for them. Fast for them if you have to. But have faith to bring Yah to them, to bring them into the kingdom. By all means, don't sit there. Do something. The 4 men with Zarahat ate the food, buried the treasures, wore the clothes. What they had received almost persuaded them to forget why they had received it. I'll repeat that. What they had received almost persuaded them to forget why they had received it. What and why are 2 words which hold life and death and blessing and cursing. What they had received was incredible, but why they received it was an amazingly awesome thing to happen. In Tehillim or Psalms 103 verse 7, it says, "He made his ways known to Moshe, his mighty deeds to the people of Israel." To Israel, Yah revealed his deeds or his acts, and that is the what. But to Moshe, Yah revealed his ways, and that is the why. Okay? The deeds are the acts, and that is the what, but the ways are the why. What we do not have a problem comprehending the doctrines of what we have. We have a problem with comprehending the doctrine of why we have it. And that's something that we have to overcome. So what do we have? We have Yeshua. We have the Ruach HaKodesh. And we have the anointing. We have the truth. The truth that sets us free. Which is an act, which is in Acts 2:38. And we'll go there again, and I know I bring this scripture up a lot. In Acts 2:38, Kepha answered them, "Turn from sin, return to Yehovah, and each of you be immersed on the authority of Yeshua HaMashiach unto forgiveness of your sins, and you will receive the gift of the Ruach HaKodesh." We have one living Yah revelation. But the most convicting and investigative question is, why do we have it? Is it to hoard it? Is it to bury it? Is it to consume it? If it is, we are just like the four men with Zaraat. We found it, we ate it, we buried it, we wear it, but we just don't want to share it. And that's something that we've got to do more and more as the time is coming for Yeshua to return. Think of Queen Esther, and she had it all. Yah gave her beauty. He elevated her to the lofty position of being queen, and then came the threat. I believe the threat of the Holocaust to the Jews in Persia, now known as Iran, was Yehovah's primary purpose for her promotion. The tools given to her for deliverance were also the touchstones of her greatest temptation. She was, think about it, in a fortified comfort zone. She was in the palace of the king. Nobody could touch her there. She had vast wardrobes and probably untold wealth. She definitely had servants to fulfill her every whim. What she had could easily make her forget why she had it. The same applies to the Messianic community. We are all King's kids. We know our rights and we know our privileges. We relish our claim to authority over demons and sicknesses. We have untold spiritual wealth and are fortified in our spiritual comfort zones. But Mordecai had to give Esther a gentle reminder. In Esther 4, 13 and 14, Mordecai asks them to give Esther this answer. "Don't suppose that merely because you happen to be in the royal palace, you will escape any more than the other Jews. For if you fail to speak up now, relief and deliverance will come to the Jews from a different direction. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows whether you didn't come into your royal position precisely for such a time as this?" We sit in a nation. I believe this nation at the moment is cursed. Many people are being bludgeoned by violence, especially women in our country. And our country is drowning, in crime. From Darwin to Adelaide to Perth, you name it. Crime is everywhere. Crime is rampant on the Gold Coast. We don't need to just sit here. We need to do something. Revival is not solely through the avenues of faith and trust. Revival can come simply through the avenue of obedience to Yehovah's will. Are we living our lives as an example of Yeshua and his Torah obedience? As Yechezkel or Ezekiel said in Ezekiel 37 verse 3, he asked me, "Human being, can these bones live?" And I answered, "Yehovah Elohim, only you know that." And Jonah was told in Jonah 1 and verse 2, "Set out for the great city of Nineveh and proclaim that their wickedness has come to my attention." Jonah, of course, was reluctant to obey. So Yah sent a whale. To me, the biggest Uber that he ever had seen to change his mind. Four men with Zaraat and no faith, but Yah did it. This is when they realized they were not doing the right thing. In Malachim Bet, or 2 Kings 7 and verse 9, it says, "But finally they said to each other, 'What we are doing is wrong. At a time of good news like this, we shouldn't keep it to ourselves. If we wait till morning, we will earn only punishment. So come on, let's go and tell the king's household.'" Then there was King David at Ziklag. The Amalekim burned the city, kidnapped David's wives and their children, so Israel wanted to stone King David to death. But we have to remember that if there was no David, there would be no Yeshua. And if there was no David, there would be no Golgotha. If there was no David, there would be no blood. And if there was no David, there would be no salvation. David, or King David, encouraged himself in Yehovah. There was no one to pat him on the back, no one to participate in his pity party, but David did something else. He encouraged himself in Yehovah. Hence we have all the Psalms or Tehillim that we have today. He wrote most of those. And everyone you can go to when you'll get words of encouragement, words to help you get over whatever you're going through. Get into the Psalms. The Proverbs will help you to live the correct way. But the Psalms, you can personalize and pray those words to Yah for yourself, as King David emptied himself out to Yah in those Tehillim. Yehovah said, "Pursue and you will recover." As humans, we have a tendency to retreat into not everything that is faced can be changed. But let me assure you, nothing can be changed unless it is faced. We have to look those demons in the face and we have to cast them out and we have to completely eradicate them from our lives. It is not until we face our fears, our enemy, our hopeless situation, can Yah move in our lives to change the situation. So let me finish with these last couple of scriptures. The first one is about King David's mighty men. I could give you more, but I'll let you know they're found in 2 Samuel chapter 23. In Shamuel 23:11-12, it says, "After him was Shema the son of Agai the Harari. The Philistine had assembled at Lachi, where there was a plot of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistine. But he stood in the middle of the plot and defended it, killing the Philistine, and Yehovah brought a great victory." And in Acts chapter 16, verses 19-30, it says, "But when the owners saw that what had come out was any further prospect of profit for them, they seized Shaul and Selah and dragged them to the market square to face the authorities. Bringing them to the judges, they said, "These men are causing a lot of trouble in our city since they are Jews. What they are doing is advocating customs that are against the law for us to accept or practice, since we are Romans." The mob joined in an attack against them, and the judges tore their clothes off them and ordered that they be flogged. After giving them a severe beating, they threw them in prison, charging the jailer to guard them securely. Upon receiving such an order, he threw them into the inner cell, clamped their feet securely between heavy blocks of wood. Around midnight, Shaul and Sila were praying and singing hymns to Yehovah. What were they doing? Praying and singing the Psalms to Yehovah, while other prisoners listened attentively. Suddenly there was a violent earthquake which shook the prison to its foundations. All the doors flew open and everyone's chains came loose. The jailer awoke, and when he saw the doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself, for he assumed that the prisoners had escaped. But Shaul shouted, "Don't harm yourself, we're all here." Calling for lights, the jailer ran in, began to tremble, and fell down in front of Shaul and Sila. Then leading them outside, he said, "Men, what must I do to be saved?" While they were in prison, they just couldn't sit there. They had to do something. Their something was a witness to all of the prisoners, as well as the jailer and his family. It said in verse 25, around midnight, Shaul and Sila were praying and singing hymns, which is Tehillim, to Yehovah. Their witness and their fact that not one prisoner escaped brought salvation to the jailer and his whole freedom, family, and freedom for Shaul and Sila. To me, that is the key to being the change. Not doing nothing, but praying, fasting if you feel necessary, and singing praises to Yehovah. He will answer your prayers, fulfill your supplications and requests to him. Only you know what is needed in your life. You are the one who needs to pray for it. Are there any questions?
The Ruach just wanted me to come up. I'm just going to wait for him to give me the words. But when you were talking about this week, I'm so sorry you've had a horrible week with your family, but it's about 3 years now that Yah has led me to the understanding of to not ask why, because it gives you such freedom and liberation in not asking why, because you lift yourself up higher. And Yah wants us to see it from his eyes and how he sees things, because his ways are different. And whenever I'm in that, the world's exploding, I can't deal with this, I just sit there going, "Yah, I trust your plan. Yah, I trust your plan." And I say that 100 times. And when I feel like I'm going to absolutely can't cope, "Yah, I trust your plan." And he lifts you up because HaSatan knows how we work. He shifts the goalposts. He knows he can't get to me because I'm unmovable in my faith. So he goes for my son. And we've had 6 years of him doing that. And my son has lifted himself up and has recognized that now. So now he knows how it works. And now this month he's going for my husband. So he moves the goalposts all the time. But it's not to panic. It's not if people are ill or have cancer, which is horrible. It's to say, what is the opportunity here? I can pray. And
that's exactly what I said.
It's a huge it's a huge opportunity for people to come to Yah. And just in the trials and stuff, we have to be jubilant in these tribulations, because it lifts your faith to a place where you don't get shifted, you don't get bothered by these things. It's just it's walk on water faith.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And I have never asked why. Yeah, I've never asked why. I know why. But the point is, Yah's going to do something good out of this. You know, I've been praying for them to come into the kingdom for, well, how long have they been together? 34 years. You know, I've been praying for them to come back into the kingdom. My son's been in it, and he's praying again, which is really, really good. And he's, that, you know, blew my mind when he said, "Mum, I'm praying. I said, "Good, darling, keep going." And so things are changing. But, you know, we just got to believe Yah has got it in control. I've given it to him, left it with him. You know, we don't take it back. We just let him do it. Yes, we keep lifting them up, especially when they're going to go through hard times. And they're going to go through harder times than they're going through at the moment. It's coming up with the healing process. Not too sure that it's healing process, but getting rid of it process. And, you know, Yah's in control. But we have to do something, and that is to pray and praise Yah, especially for his mercies and for bringing them into the kingdom. This is could be their revival. I don't know. Yah's got in control. Anything else? We will go to the remembrance service.